Alrighty. Welcome back to the Self-Excited Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Tepetubai. I'm joined by Alex Goldberg and Dr. Justin Quinn. We've got a couple things on our plate. Let me tell you what is up for today. You're going to do the news because there's some news. We're going to do a Celtics State of the Union as we head into the downstretch of the season. But we're also going to talk about Star Trek Picard, the new Star Trek series, because our guest today, Sopan Deb of the New York Times, just had a huge piece where Sopan, you sat down with the cast and crew. So we want to talk about that, and we're going to tie that to the Boston Celtics. So without further ado, Sopan Deb, welcome back to Celtics Lab.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a thrill to be back.
Yeah, we'd love to have you on. And the Star Trek thing, admittedly, Alex and I are not huge Trekkies, but Justin was all over that. So
I'm disappointed in you too.
But we're going to learn. I mean, I love Patrick Stewart, so I'm open. So we're going to learn. Sopan, I wanted to ask you about your book that came out over the summer because I don't think we've chatted about it. Kay Adass's Second Act. How's it going?
Well, thank you for asking. Yeah, it was with my. I wrote a novel. It's my second book, but that was my debut, and I'm really thrilled that it's out there in the world now. It's about a grieving Bengali family that in New Jersey, which is where I grew up, and they try to grieve for their lost teenager by staging a play that she wrote. So it's a play about grief and redemption and the healing power of art. And you know, a lot of the book is based on my own upbringing, and a lot of the characters are named after family friends that I had. And I was very involved in the theater program in high school, and I've written about theater for the Times. So it was just, you know, one of those things that made a lot of sense for me to write about for my first novel. And so I'm really excited that it's out there, and I'm excited for people to read it.
Cool. Where in New Jersey are you from?
Howell, which is right by the Jersey Shore area, Belmar. I don't know if you guys know Jersey at all, sure, but actually, it is right by. If you guys remember the show, The Jersey Shore, it's right by where that's filmed.
Wow, what a claim to fame! I was gonna say my girlfriend's from Princeton, but that's way better.
Okay,
that puts it on the map way better for me.
Yeah, for sure, sure.
Alrighty, well, I'm gonna check it out. I'll tell you off air, but why that tickles my fancy so much. But it sounds great. Anyways, please. Let's get into the Celtic stuff, the Star Trek stuff, and then a little bit of NBA news. So let's do the State of the Union Celtics edition. It's not the halfway point of the season, but it's the nominal halfway point of the season. Sopan, I'll go to you first, but then Alex and Justin, I want to hear your thoughts as well. Boston is 42-17, first in the East, first in the NBA. They've got the third best offense, the fifth best defense, and the number one net rating. Sopan Deb, what is the State of the Union for the Boston Celtics?
The State of the Union is strong. You know, the starting lineup of what I think the biggest boost is going to be is that the Horford, Smart, Tatum, Brown, Time Lord lineup has only played, 29 minutes this year together? Mm-hmm. And I believe they're all healthy now, at least as healthy as one can expect this time of year. So, you know, you in theory hope that in the last 25, whatever amount of games are left, that they built and continue together. I mean, Derek White in February averaged something like 21, 5, and 5. And he's coming off the bench for the Celtics. Malcolm Brogdon, who's now one of the best 3-point shooters in the league, he's coming off the bench for the Celtics. Those guys are starters on the vast majority of NBA teams. So to me, I look, if the Celtics don't win the championship this year, it's not because they don't have the talent, and it's not because they don't have the experience, right? And so it's something intangible. And so they won't enter any series as underdogs as far as I'm concerned. And if you're a team, that's the position you want to be in. So look, there are some worrying signs since they started 18-4. The offense has slowed down quite a bit, and well, but there were like signs of it kicking back to life the last couple of years. But if this team gets healthy and it looks like they are, I think that they're in very good shape coming down the stretch.
I'm inclined to agree. Alex, the ketchup to my mustard, what do you think?
You know, I largely agree with that, and I've been pretty optimistic just with what I've seen, particularly from the bench in this recent stretch where a number of guys have missed time between Rob kind of being in and out of the lineup, Smart, Brown both being out for extended periods of time. The bench has really stepped up, and it seems like they now have 4 to 5 guys coming off of the bench that they can legitimately trust in a playoff type of atmosphere. The only thing that's giving me pause about Boston right now, and I think it kind of aligns with a lot of what we've been saying about the Celtics this year, which is that the biggest threat to the Celtics is probably themselves, mm-hmm. is that I am a little concerned, and I want to see more of, not like alarmed, but I'm watching what's going to happen to this team when three-point shots stop falling at the rate that they are in playoff intensity defense environments. The concern is that they don't, if they are so reliant on the three now and they are chucking threes at a crazy rate, that they might wind up in a James Harden Houston Rockets heyday situation where they end up forcing the three above all else and sacrificing good offense for doing that. Now, I do think that this roster is better designed to handle that situation than some of those James Harden Houston Rockets teams. They have an elite defense that they can fall back on, and they can get in a rock fight if they need to and still bank on the superstar talent of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown to create in isolation. But I do wonder if, you know, they're in a playoff series against a stout Milwaukee defense or something like that, and the three stops falling, are they going to be able to read that and react and adjust in time to kind of get out of a series like that? That will be slow and muddy and grimy.
Can I just say something really quickly, which is
sure.
The James Harden example. I mean, if you look at the results of the James Harden example, they came within minutes of beating the greatest NBA roster in the history of basketball. You know, they just happened to run into the one team that they, you know, and so to that point, it's like, if you look at the results, it's actually not a bad cautionary tale if you're going to pick one. Anyway, but
completely fair. And the only other thing I would add to that is that, as you said, like they ran into a kind of unstoppable juggernaut and went blow for blow for them. That juggernaut does not exist in the NBA as it stands right now. Now we'll see what happens with the Phoenix Suns, but as it stands right now, there is not a Golden State Warriors equivalent for Boston. And again, it does have to be said, I think this roster, when healthy, is deeper than some of those Rockets teams. So we'll see. They're in a really good spot, but it's not like they are, you know, an overwhelming and unstoppable juggernaut, particularly when the best teams in the Eastern Conference, Milwaukee, Cleveland, et cetera, are really gaining steam right now.
You kind
Dustin,
of
I want to. Well, I was going to ask you to tile this to Joe Mazzulla, but I just want to...
I have the perfect thing, and you're probably reading my mind, because I saw your finger go up at the exact same moment the light bulb went off on my head.
Oh, no, I'm going to bury the Celtics for a second.
Oh, really?
The James Harden Rockets catch so much flack. I think it's, like, lost to history that in 2018 in the Eastern Conference Finals in Game 7, Boston shot 7 of 39 from 3. So Boston has, you know, come up cold, cold, cold from three when the game is on the line. So obviously James Harden and Rockets got buried for that, but the Celtics were right
Chris
there.
Paul, Chris Paul didn't play that game seven, right? Or he didn't play.
He was hurt for like two or three games. I think he came back for game seven, but he was only nominally back or something like that. You might be right. I'm not 100% on that. But anyways, Justin.
Speaking of Chris Paul, that's exactly where I wanted to go with this. When we said that the Celtics' biggest threat might be themselves, can we stop playing them so many minutes? I think it's time to spread those minutes out for the stretch run. I think they have a comfortable cushion. I know, you know, the Bucks have been playing better, but Giannis is probably going to miss some time. They are the closest team to upsetting the Celtics in the top seed. I don't think they're going to catch the Celtics. I think it's time to start spreading those minutes out a little bit more through the roster.
I mean, Derek White and Malcolm Brogdon are there for a reason.
Exactly.
And Grant Williams, who is probably underrated at times this season. Sofon, what do you think of Joe Mazzulla? We haven't asked you about him.
You know, coaches are such a hard thing to assess. Like, if you remember what Doc Rivers' reputation was in 2007, and then look at what his reputation became after 2008, and then look at his track record since then. Is Doc Rivers, he's had kind of three different lifetimes as a coach. Four, if you include his Orlando Magic Coach of the Year. Is Doc Rivers that different of a coach in all four of those phases of his career? Probably not. He's the same, probably the same guy, right? And right. So coaches are a really tough thing to truly, they're judged kind of against their expectations. And so if you're a team that overachieves, your coach is very likely to win Coach of the Year. If you're a team that meet expectations, it's like, well, whatever, you know, he's got, you know, whatever. In the case of Joe Mazzulla, this is a very unprecedented, unusual situation. Who can complain? I mean, what more do you want from the guy? They're literally the best team in the NBA. What more could you possibly ask for? Sure, could he call a little bit more, you know, timeouts? Maybe, you know, but you, if you look at that as like a long-term project to get the team more used to dealing with adversity, I mean, whatever. You know, would I have liked him to call a timeout as a, you know, against, you know, going, you know, down 3 points with, you know, in a one possession game at the end of the Bucks where all your top playmakers are out? Yeah, ideally, yes. But, you know, whatever. I just don't know how to judge a coach, because all you can do is really judge it by the results. And with Joe Mazzulla, like, what more can you ask for? What more do you want? And they're the best team in the NBA. That's you know, for a while they had the best offense in the history of the NBA. Is he better or worse than Ime Udoka? I don't know. You know, I don't know what Ime would do with the same roster. You know, so anyway, all that is to say is, if you're a Celtics fan, what complaints could you possibly have about Joe Mazzulla? Like, what? Like, I just don't know what more you want from the guy.
Yeah, there are times where to finish an article or something, I kind of just want to like insert the shrug emoji, because it's good to be this good at basketball. The nitpicky things that we kind of have to digest on a day to day or week to week basis as Celtics content creators, to your point, the grand scheme of things, like they're really pedantic little arguments. So I don't think that there's real complaints with Joe Mazzulla, at least not yet anyways. I mean, things could change. Alrighty. I mean, we covered a lot about what we were going to talk about in our notes. I'll go around the horn just because it's still pertinent. The Celtics still have an open roster spot. The buyout market still looms large. A few names that we have considered have signed elsewhere. I'm pretty intrigued by this Kevin Love in Miami thing, but Sopan, I'll go to you, but I'll go to everyone eventually. What do you think of this open roster spot for Boston? Big deal, little deal, no deal? Do you have any names in mind? Any pressing thoughts?
Little deal, no names in mind. The team is stacked. I mean, who is the 12th guy they're going to sign that is really going to make a difference at this point? That fills a hole. What's the hole they need to fill? You could use another big man, but ideally, you know, Luke Kornet's your third string big man, right? And like, who are you signing that's better and knows their role than Luke Kornet right now that's on the market?
Mike Muscala's also.
I mean, Mike Muscala, he comes in, he's immediately drops, you know, 13 points a game on 50% 3-point shooting. Like, what's the hole? Again, the Celtics are already, I think, the most talented 1 through 12 team in the NBA. You know, they've reached a point with their talent where I think adding could be, you know, I sound like Yogi Berra, you know, adding could be subtracting, right? Because every minute you give to someone you sign is a minute taken away from the other plus players, the Dwights, the Brogdons, even the Housers and the you know, Grants, etc. And that has its own, you know, they're having trouble finding Peyton Pritchard minutes. And, you know, I'm not saying Peyton Pritchard is some world beater, but he definitely gets more time on other teams. So at this point, you have a lot of minutes to give out. You kind of have to, you know, spread those out. Like, I don't think Blake Griffin on another team is getting DNPs every single night. I just don't think that's the case. I still think Blake Griffin has a little bit more game left in him than that. And thankfully for the Celtics, he's accepted his role. I'm just saying, like, who's the difference making signing that is left on the market right now that is worth taking minutes away from the other playmakers you have on the team? I don't see anyone that's an interesting name for that.
Yeah, I actually had a crazy idea of them trying to get RJ Hampton onto the roster when that became a thing for about 5 minutes, because he's going to the Detroit Pistons now. But I still think that if they do fill someone in that, they should just look for someone who can play some games when they do rest some of the people on the roster, who can be cheap depth in the future, like a multi-year contract if they can get a waiver wire of somebody who still has a couple years left on that deal, or even just bringing somebody in, getting them used to the system and having a chance, kind of like a Cabangele, but in the middle of the season.
Like Kevin Love was a name that kind of intrigued me, but then again, like, okay, you're not going to play Kevin Love down the stretch because you're going to play, you know, the main five. And then if you're not playing the main five, you're going to bring in Brogdon, you're going to bring in White, you're going to bring in Grant. You know, Kevin Love is not particularly known for his defense. And the Cleveland Cavaliers, one of the best teams in the NBA, let this guy go to a rival midseason. Yeah. You know, what does that tell you?
More than
what does that tell you about Kevin Love's value right now, what he's bringing to the team? And I really like Kevin Love. He's had an amazing career. This is not a knock on Kevin Love per se, but you know, he'd essentially be getting the same amount of minutes with Boston in Boston that he was getting in Cleveland that he was unhappy with. Mm-hmm. So what's the, you know, I just didn't see any sort of, call up someone from the G League if you have to, you know, that's if you need insurance.
Yeah. And to that point, I have been saying now for a little bit that the single most important attribute that any Celtics potential buyout candidate could bring is vibes. They just need to sign a good vibes guy to have in the locker room to, you know, hang out with guys. A Theo Pinson type. Unfortunately, yeah. The Mavericks are keyed into his vibes and are not letting him go. But to that end, I think there's an obvious candidate on the Celtics market that people have not been talking about that should be considered for the buyout. And I'm, of course, referring to all-time vibes guy Gershon Yabusele, who is currently playing in Madrid. Like, if you're looking for a vibes dude, go get that guy.
I don't think I would make enough money in the NBA. I think he's making a good amount of money over there right now. He's a pretty good player for them, but maybe Aaron Baines in a similar vein, something like that. I mean, he can probably play a little bit, but I don't think he'd ever see the floor. I don't think anybody, I mean, honestly, we should probably just move on because like the buyout guy is not going to be changing much of anything.
There's an interesting like thing to think about, which is the Celtics are, you know, the best team in the NBA record wise. And it's tough to discuss a team that is stacked top to bottom, that is the best team in the NBA. So you have nothing to really get angry about. Everything's kind of set. It's not like, you know, especially in Boston where people like fans really like to, you know, get mad about stuff. There's like, what do you have? You can't be that mad right now as a Celtics fan about much. Like most of the players, you know, I like the closer you get is to like get upset at Grant Williams every now and then, like, you know, get upset at Joe Mazzulla doesn't call enough timeouts. There's not, you know, it's a pretty good time to be a Celtics fan, I think.
Well, that's a good segue to this next silly bit. But first I want to pause the action and talk to you about our sponsor. I also feel like I'm obliged to at least make mention of Carmelo Anthony whenever we talk about the buyout market, because that dude is making no money right now and he's a good vibes guy. But anyways,
I'm tired, Cameron. I'm tired.
I bet Melo's not. I bet he's fresh. He hasn't played all season. BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting this season. Everything from pro and college basketball, UFC, MMA, NHL, and more. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. And with live betting options, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport and game imaginable, BetOnline is truly the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite leagues and events. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Make sure to use our promo code CLNS50 to receive your rewards. BetOnline.ag, where the game starts. Okay, speaking of the doldrums of a very fun regular season, last week we taste tested Marcus Smart cereal, and this week, Soap on Depp, we're gonna make an extension to the Boston Celtics, but we're really here to talk to you about Star Trek Picard. So in the Times, what was it, last week on the 15th, you had this great sit down with Patrick Stewart and LeVar Burton and a bunch of members of the cast and crew. Tell us about how this story came about, and then we're gonna talk Star Trek as in Boston Celtics.
Yeah, I wish this involved some story involving like multiple coffees where I had to like convince the cast member to sit down, but no, it was just it was just an email. I was just like, hey, you guys, it's a new season of Picard coming out. But I've been writing about Star Trek for years for the Times. I've been a fan of the franchise since I was a kid. I used to dress up and, you know, whatever. Like, Star Trek has been a big part of my life, you know, growing up. And so it was, I have to be honest, I'm very much a professional. I'm very much, you know, not sitting there like gushing over them or anything like that. But in to the extent that I can be excited within the confines of my job about something, this was one of the coolest things I've ever gotten to do. And just like sitting there and these are people that I've watched on screen in some form or fashion going back 30 years, and being able to ask them the questions that I've always wanted to ask them about, you know, being on this show that has influenced me so much, that was cool, man. Because like usually you get those opportunities at like panels, and like conventions and stuff. And I've never been to a Starter convention, but like, you know, you line up at the microphone and there are hundreds of people waiting out. You get maybe one question in, and it's like a different, here's just like all of us in a hotel room. I'm sitting with them, and like Patrick Stewart's cramped on a couch with like LeVar Burton and, you know, Michael Dorn and Jonathan Frakes and Gates McFadden, Brent Spiner. And he had an illness. So he insisted that he zoom in. And I'm like, what is, this is so weird. And, it was just, they were very nice. And it was just so nice to be able to have a conversation with this cast that's now reuniting for this new season.
Yeah, I understand that sensation of like, you know, meeting people that you look up to or you've seen 1,000 times in your life and being surprised at how easy it is to play it cool. And only looking back, do you get to like think back to like, oh my God, that was so crazy. I don't think I'd keep it cool around Patrick Stewart. Quite frankly, I'm not a big Star Trek fan, but Patrick Stewart is.
You know, Patrick Stewart, obviously, yeah, Patrick Stewart is the biggest actor in that group. I mean, they're all very accomplished and whatnot in their own ways and whatever. But Patrick Stewart's like the biggest name in that group. Couldn't have been kinder. Couldn't have been, and cool. That's what kind of matters to me the most. Ultimately, like, you know, I've done interviews with celebrities that they have a lot of. You know, they know they're celebrities and that comes through in the way they interact with you. That was not the case with this crew. And that was cool. That was great to find out. Patrick was just, and I feel ridiculous saying Patrick as if I know him. I had one conversation
with Pat.
Good old Pat. Good old Pat. And I know he couldn't have been, he was so nice and so kind and just walked right over to shake my hand. And you know, what was nice about it is here's what stuck out to me actually, is that it was during a day when they were doing a lot of interviews. Now we were the Times was the only one to get all of them for one interview, but they were breaking off into pairs, doing interviews and whatever. We were the ones who got them all in a group for the first time. And you could tell they were really engaged in the conversation, which I've done interviews and you could tell. I mean, listen, you see NBA press conferences, right?
Yeah.
Like they don't want to be there. They want to get the heck out of there, man. These guys were really, really engaged. And it was really cool.
I love that. Yeah. Alex, when Divine Sweater hits it big, stay humble.
I'll do my best.
I'm going to swing it to Justin, who is a true Trekkie. And Justin, I want you to first, I don't think fans of this podcast really mind, but make the connection to the Celtics a little bit stronger and then off to the races with our little game.
Sure. So I just want to say, I went to an undergrad who actually the school's motto references Star Trek. It is, there's more to running a starship than asking a bunch of damn fool questions. That's New College of Florida. We are currently under attack by Ron DeSantis, but that's another story you can look up and read about yourself. It's giving me lots of nightmares. But anyway, so there have been some pretty notable fans of science fiction in Celtics lore in the past. I know Casey Jones, for example, and Bill Russell were both big Star Wars fans. I don't know if they like Star Trek, but there was one member of the Celtics, I think he was only with the Celtics for one season, Harry Boykoff, whose main claim to fame is being so good at blocking shots. They outlawed any shots on a downward arc, what we now call goaltending, to be a legal act in the NBA. So he did have an impact in the NBA, even though he was only, I think he only played like 25 or 30 games for the Celtics. But he later in life got into acting and actually played a bunch of bit roles on a lot of the Next Generation spinoff series over the years. So that definitely caught my attention. But I was wondering if you happen to know, Sopan, if any of the Picard cast happen to be NBA fans, or if you are aware of any other Celtics fans who happen to be Trek fans.
I don't know. I'm sure they might be. I just don't know. But I do know another NBA connection, which is that James Worthy once played a Klingon on an episode of Star Trek Generation. Yep, he did. I don't think he had any lines. Star Trek has had a bunch of like random cameos that people don't know about, like The Rock.
Tom Morello
was on Star Trek. Tom Morello, right? I forgot about that one. That's a good one. There have been a bunch of random ones throughout the years, but I don't know of any Celtic specific Star Trek connections off the top of my head. But if I think of any, you'll have to have me back on next time. Just for this point, and then I'll sign back off.
So we know who Boycott was, right? As we are wont to do, I came up with a game of who among the Picard core characters who are returning from the Next Generation, like if they were Boston Celtics, who would be that character's personality? And if you disagree with my takes, just let me know who you think should be that role. But I'm just going to go through them all to give you a little bit of time to think. So for me, Picard, Jean-Luc Picard, for those of you who may not be Trekkies, he's the Enterprise captain. I believe he gets elevated to an admiral role in the new series. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm very excited to check that out. So for me, trying to find someone who fit that, I was thinking like Al Horford, right? Because he's directing things behind the scenes. He's got the gravitas, right? That erudite Shakespearean train kind of loves his Earl Grey hot personality. But it's Jason Tatum ship now, I think. So I don't really see how I can have anyone else be in that role, at least in my opinion. Riker, for me, Jalen Brown is just too obvious there. I mean, I'm open to alternatives. But I thought for just a second about Ime Udoka for the problematic workplace relationship, but I I'm not going to do that. So I do wonder how the Federation let that stuff go on the Enterprise. But I digress. The data, I think, has to be Grant, right? Because he's impossibly smart, got superhuman strength, but he's also kind of weird, right? He doesn't really quite fit in the way that most of us do. He has his own little way of doing things, and you know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just who he is. Very much like Data.
I just need to hop in. I don't know these characters, but that sounds perfect, Justin. That Data Grant one really.
I thought he was the best fit, to be honest.
I'm on mute. The YouTube crowd can see me and Alex laughing. But that one made me feel like I had to hop in and say that one feels exceptionally good.
Good. Thank you. Worf, I initially thought it was JB, right? Because he can be kind of an enforcer. He's very, very intelligent. And then I just realized I'm describing Marcus as well. So for me, I think that Worf is Marcus Mark. Deanna Troi, has to be Al. He has an almost empathic ability to know what needs to be said to whom and when. He's always saying, you know, our group. He's always concerned about the cohesion of the team. So for me, that is really the person. You know, he inspires people in the same kind of way that Deanna Troi did. So those are my takes. Any bad? Any good?
Yeah, I can't really disagree on much of that. Who'd you have as Data?
Grant. Super nerd.
Yeah,
super
the only thing is, like, Data, you know, his whole character is the point that he doesn't know how to have emotions. And Grant gets a little testy with referees, to say the least.
Maybe that's Joe Mazzulla.
Yeah.
Yeah. But listen, I mean, if you had to cram, like, you know, one person into every role, I think you did a very, you know, very serviceable job. I don't really have many quibbles.
Thank you. Thank you much.
Wow, now I need to watch the show to make these connections.
I am floored. You guys have never watched any Star Trek. That's your homework.
I don't know. I'm on like Breaking Bad and Saul and all these depressing shows about like semi-real characters. It's been tough for me to get into sci-fi TV. That's just me.
Really, not a Last of Us fan.
I've been told that I should watch it. I'm intrigued at least a little bit, but we'll see.
Have you guys noticed that a lot of recent post-apocalyptic shows are like set in really starting in Boston? Raised by Wolves, I think, also started in Boston.
What does that say? Justin, to that point, you know, when the Bruins and the Celtics both win their respective championships this year, and then there's the double parade, that seems like a logical, like, inflection point for all sorts of things to happen.
Western society, yeah. All right, Soap on Deb of the New York Times. This Star Trek piece is out there for folks who haven't checked it out. Kaya Das' second act is out there for folks who haven't checked it out. Anything else you want to plug before we let you go?
No, thank you, though. Thank you for having me.
Anytime.
Sure. Well, the pleasure's all on this side of the screen, and we'll catch you soon, I'm sure.
All right, guys. Take care. Talk soon.
All right, thanks again, Soap on Deb, the New York Times, for stopping by. We're going to talk about the news. It's All-Star break, so the news is there was an All-Star game. I think that self-explanatory. I guess there's a little bit of news with Grosbeck. One of the owners of the Celtics said Boston is looking at the buyout market, but we kind of already covered that. If we have time, we'll do that again. Grant Williams was elected a four-year term as the first vice president of the MBPA, as in the second in command. It's a confusing system where there's a president, a first vice president, and six additional vice presidents. So as someone had to write about that, I was quite confused the whole time I was writing about it. But good job, Grant. And anyways, let's do this. I think anyone who's listening knows that Tatum did not win the three-point contest, but he did win the MVP and broke the scoring record at the All-Star game. And Jaylen Brown had 35 points. He was the third leading scorer in the All-Star game. Alex and Justin, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do what I do with my homeroom, which is give me your high, your low, and your buffalo for All-Star weekend. Your high point, your favorite thing, your low point, the thing you didn't like the most, and the buffalo, just a random thing you would like to share, Celtics or otherwise.
Sure.
I don't think I need to model that. So Alex, I'll go to you first.
Yeah, the high for me has got to be Mac McClung's outstanding dunk contest performance. Total surprise. Had no idea that that was coming from Mac McClung. Daryl, you need to sign this man after that performance for the vibes and fan presence alone. That was an awesome, impressive performance. And I got to say, like, I think Mac McClung now needs to like get matched up against Aaron Gordon and things like that. He's been elevated to a different tier of dunk contest participant in my mind. That's my high. My low is, folks, the new skills challenge is terrible. And there's just no way to get around it. It's an awful product. It's a boring watch. Nobody takes it seriously. The one-on-one skills challenge that they had a couple years ago was fine. It was perfectly entertaining. And then they moved away from it for this dumb team-based skills challenge with a bunch of players that nobody cares about. I'm tired of seeing the freaking Antetokounmpo bros on All-Star Weekend. I don't care. They're not interesting. Get the skills challenge out of here. Replace it with something better, please. And then my Buffalo for this All-Star weekend, you know, I know that the All-Star game is not actual basketball, as Jaylen Brown alluded to in his interview comments. Like, nobody is watching it for a high degree of competitive, high-level play. I had fun watching Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown clear out and play one-on-ones against each other. I don't see any particular problem with it. Some All-Star games, people are going to take it really seriously. Some All-Star games, people are not. Either way, that's not really what the All-Star game is about. It's more about just like watching NBA players do crazy stuff without any of the limitations of like the obligation of having to play good team basketball, which I think is entertaining sometimes. So that's my high-low Buffalo for All-Star weekend.
So you already mentioned my high, which is obviously Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown competing against each other in the only real competition that took place in that entire weekend, really. The low could be a lot of things. I'm just going to go with the low being the amount of complaining that we all did about it. But that ties into the Buffalo. I think I don't remember what podcast I heard him on. It was an athletic podcast, but I think it was Jake King who mentioned that the All-Star game is kind of in the redeem team cycle of its existence. And as such, it really, really needs an organizational effort from within to recruit and engage the league's bigger stars, as he noted, not all of them, but some of them, because they need to put in some work. We talked on the last podcast about ways they can improve them, so I won't rehash that. But I mean, they need to have some institutional commitment beyond just, you know, throwing money at players. They need to really, like, it does matter. This is, I won't say it's a flagship aspect of the league, but it's a very important public relations aspect of the league, and it does need more attention than it's been getting.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, the dunk contest and the whatever the skills challenge could use more star power. But even it was interesting, other than, I haven't looked this up, other than LeBron, was Dame Lillard the only All-Star in his 30s who played? Because maybe there's like one other guy, but I didn't think that they did a nice job of like, no, other than LeBron, yeah. I don't know that they paired, like it would have been nice to like really showcase like Tatum and Mitchell are playing together, and like they did play together, but it was just like so unstructured. So Dr. Quinn, I agree that they're just like, there was nothing classic about it, even though like a lot of classic things happened. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not ever gonna watch this game again, or like the highlights from this game, even though ostensibly there's like immense star power. For me, I guess another high point for me would be Giannis. He's just so charismatic. The draft, he was great. The coaching, the celebrity game, he was great. Subbing himself out was, I hope he's okay, but that was great. He's so good. He's got like that Shaq charisma. It just like makes me really happy that he's stepping into his own as like really the face of the NBA. Because soon Steph and LeBron and them will be gone, and they'll need that. And Giannis has it.
One little sidebar I'd just like to throw out there for the NBA, if anyone who has any poll happens to be listening. If you have a problematic person who is going to be in attendance, you do not have to showcase them. You can, you know, put the spotlight on them. They wave from the audience. Move on. I think that's the right thing to do, as an aside.
Problematic is quite the euphemism. Other than that low point, that's probably a good low point. The low point for me was just presentation sucks. Like, Justin, like you were saying, they've been doing this for, I think, 72 years. Like, this is a flagship product of the NBA, and the NBA has been around enough that it can take itself a little more seriously. Like, the goddamn player introductions are just, I know the whole product is geared towards a 16-year-old who is like watching while also on TikTok, but like 45 minutes of really horrible intros as like smoke goes off and those poor dancers have to dance the whole time. It just, there's nothing classy about it. There's nothing interesting about it. It's just tired and cheap. It felt cheap. The presentation of it was a mess. Speaking of which, my Buffalo is TNT did not rise to the challenge. The audio team, I don't know what happened, but they dropped the ball and then they dropped it again. They dropped it again. That was wild. I mean, I will say, Alex, I did enjoy myself quite a lot. And it was one of those nights where, like, I guess enough people were watching on Twitter or people I was texting with. It just, like, felt like a fun event. And we're being curmudgeonly about being curmudgeonly. I mean, Tatum scored 55 goddamn points. I mean, it was awesome. But anyways, that's my high-low Buffalo. I guess I also forgot in the news, and sorry if you can hear Ricky barking in the background, Tatum's shoes came out. They looked suspiciously similar to the ones that leaked, that he said were not the shoes that when they did leak.
Technically true. There's three other colorways.
I'm going to go on mute while this dog keeps barking, but anyone have thoughts on these shoes?
I would buy the pink lemonade ones. I think those look pretty fire. The rest of them are on a scale of, I wouldn't be embarrassed to be seen in them, to, this is for a costume party.
Yeah, I mean, the red, white, and blue ones are pretty solid as well. I have no issue with that. I think the shoes are good. They're not, like, I'm going to say, my outright favorite looking basketball shoes ever. But, you know, I think for a debut signature shoe for Jason Tatum, not bad. I think I'm looking forward to the Tatum 2s, which I'm sure will be much better.
Well, interestingly, they're called the JT 1s. It stands for Jordan Tatum 1. It's not Jason Tatum 1, which... I don't know how many people were in a room when they decided that, but what the hell is that? If anyone needs an affordable basketball shoe, maybe I recommend Peak brand. They're pretty good. I'm enjoying myself wearing those shoes. Hey,
no free commercials, dang it.
Oh, that's not a sponsor. That's a personal plug. Anyways, thank you to Sopon Dev from New York Times for talking to us. Thank you to our sponsor, betonline.ag. They are a sponsor. Thank you to Alex and Justin for being my friend, and thanks for liking and subscribing to our podcast. Happy All-Star break. We'll see you soon. Adios.